Coming up next on Daddy on Board 97, I'll talk about the relationship between race, IQ, and wealth. We'll talk a little bit about school lunches, swimming lessons, and you know there's no way you're getting out of here this week without me talking about The Dark Knight Rises. All that and more waiting for you just around the corner on a brand new Dob. Welcome, parents and children whose parents are forcing them to listen to Daddy on Board 97. My name is Mike Quackenbush. I am your host. I am a podcaster here at the Grizzly Productions Network, a professional wrestler with the organization Chikara, and the parent of a three-year-old boy named Elliot. This week's program is made possible by Gazelle. They want to give you money for your used Apple gadget or smartphone. Find out what yours is worth right now at gazelle.com. The Drobo is the defender of your entire digital life. Protect every photo, file, video, and more with the new Drobo Mini. It's portable. You live on the road? Even if you live on the water, our sponsors Cobra Electronics have got your back. Check out their full line of GPS and marine navigation devices at cobra.com. And by Duracell PowerMat, who have made your wireless gizmo truly wireless. You can charge wirelessly and never be powerless when you have a power mat. All right, loyal Dobbers, I want to update you on a story that we covered twice in recent episodes here on Daddy on Board as it relates to kids and fast food. Now, it should come as no surprise to you that fast food is not always the healthiest of options, right? I don't think that necessarily is a headline in and of itself, but we've talked about the fact that fast food chains have these meals which they attempt to frame or otherwise market as if they are healthier options for our kids. And the truth is, of course, that many of these really are not healthy at all. According to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, the PCRM, which of course you remember from an episode of The X-Files, have come out and listed in particular what they think are the five worst of these options for you. And some of the statistics I found really stunning. At the top of their list was the Chick-fil-A Grilled Nuggets Kids Meal. What was surprising to me about this was, of course, you would think that the grilled nuggets would offer some kind of healthier alternative, and yet the entire meal, the way that it is presented for kids to eat, contains more cholesterol total than a Big Mac. I found that to be somewhat surprising. You may not be surprised to find on the list the McDonald's cheeseburger Happy Meal is considered one of the unhealthiest options out there. And this is the version, incidentally, that comes with apple slices and milk. We're not even talking about the version. You could, alternately get a version with fries and a soda if you really wanted. And yet, that version of it would contain more sodium than if you ate 10 orders of the kid-sized French fries from McDonald's, does the cheeseburger Happy Meal. I found that information to be stunning. I'm sure the PCRM wouldn't lie to me about that sort of thing. Also on the list, beware of the Sonic Kids Junior Burger Meal, which again is another one that's certainly made to look as if it is healthy. There is a way, though, to change the odds in your favor. The way it is served, including the apple slices that come with a caramel dipping sauce, they are getting the same amount of sugar as if they ate two Twinkies. You can drastically reduce the sugar intake if you take away the caramel dipping sauce. Something to think about. Also on the list, Burger King's Hamburger Kids Meal, framed to be healthy, apparently. That is definitely not the case. A terrific offender on the list to be on the lookout for is Denny's. They have a kid version of the Build Your Own Slam for breakfast, a very fatty and high in cholesterol meal. It should come as no surprise. Now, what is important to remember about this, of course, it seems like we're always talking about this, right? All these unhealthy options that are out there. But the truth is, in moderation, every once and again, there's nothing wrong with indulging in something like this. The mistake, I think, that sometimes we make as parents is thinking, because this is marketed to us as if it is a healthy alternative, we can't necessarily believe that. I know that this is shocking information, but we cannot always believe the people that want our money. And the fast food industry is among them. So yes, in moderation, are these things necessarily harmful? Probably not. Every once in a great while, you could probably get away with it. And certainly there are going to be those occasions when you're on the go and you're pressed for time, and that seems like the best alternative. But be aware of the fact that despite people's best efforts to convince you that these things may in fact be healthy, that is generally not the case when you're dealing with these so-called healthy alternative kids' meals. Now, on a semi-related note, semi-related at best, we have all heard, I think all of us have grown up with this idea that kids need to drink milk, right? But you may have heard over the course of the last week or two about this increasing push from a group of physicians that are petitioning the U.S. government to get milk removed from the menu of school lunches. Now, milk's been included in school lunches since the beginning of the government program that was introduced back in the 40s under the School Lunch Act, where Congress specified that school lunches have to be nutritionally balanced for kids, right? And this certainly seemed like it was done with the best of intentions. Throughout the 70s, even into the 80s, there was a battle over whether or not these lunches should include full-fat or low-fat milk. And then eventually even went on to include a dairy milk substitute to accommodate those with special dietary needs. And that was back in 2004 that it was amended as such. The latest of these updates, and that goes into effect this month, in the month of July, when school's out, of course, requires that only non-fat and low-fat milks be served with school lunches. And, of course, we all grow up with the idea that it contains things like calcium that kids need. Now, this new petition from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, the PCRM, there they are again, see, it is semi-related, states that it is scientifically proven milk is high in animal fats, animal protein, and sugar, and it makes it actually more harmful than it is helpful to bones. Quote, research also shows that children can get all the calcium they need from non-dairy sources, such as beans, tofu, broccoli, kale, collard greens, breads, cereals, and non-dairy fortified beverages without any of the health detriments that's associated with dairy consumption, end quote. The petition recommends calcium-fortified soy milk and rice milk as good substitutes for dairy beverages. They do go on to say here, and a couple professors of nutrition, including Marion Nestle from New York University, as well as other doctors, basically came out and said, milk is neither a poison nor an essential. They don't think there's any compelling reason not to include it in school lunches. There is certainly no compelling reason to require it either. So certainly I expect that a lot more of that is going to be playing up closer to back to school time, and anything relevant to that story I will update you about. Here is something very important that parents need to be aware of as it relates to a potential pertussis epidemic. That's the whooping cough. You're wondering what I'm talking about, pertussis. The number of pertussis cases this year rose to 18,000 in an outbreak that is looking to be the most severe of the last 50 years. And it could, people are suspecting, have to do with possible waning vaccine protections, at least according to health officials, as this has been breaking over the course of the last week or so. Washington State, as far back as April, declared an epidemic of this. Wisconsin was also hit particularly hard. Each of them had more than 3,000 cases apiece in their state. That's according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. You'll remember them, of course, from an episode of The X-File. Nine people have died this year from that, which is way, way up over recent statistics. Pertussis causes severe, virtually uncontrollable coughing. Now, here in the U.S., most kids are immunized with a five-dose series of vaccines given through shots starting from the age of 2 months old. However, all adults, including pregnant women, should get a booster shot because the contagious illness is especially dangerous for children that are under 1 year old who have yet to complete their cycle of vaccinations, according to the CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, which is a mouthful and needs an easier to pronounce and shorter acronym. Quote, it's most dangerous for babies, end quote, from Dr. Anne Shukat. There you have it. Help prevent infant deaths. Be mindful of this. Make sure your vaccinations are up to date as it relates to pertussis. Let's keep this epidemic from spreading. Let's contain it to the states that start with W. Okay? Washington and Wisconsin. Is there another one of those? Let's keep it there. Nowhere else, please. Hey, I'm going to go swimming through the blogosphere. I'm probably going to talk about the Dark Knight, too. But before I get to any of that, There is a great deal going on right now, and you don't have long to take advantage of it. So let me tell you a little bit about the Cobra Tag two-way locator system. Through the free app that works right on your smartphone, also works with your Android, it works with your BlackBerry. It's not just iOS devices like the iPhone that work with this. You can set up any item, protect it with the Cobra Tag against loss or theft. So if you're always, for example, losing your keys, misplacing them, you attach the Cobra Tag to it, and you can use your phone then as a locator for it anytime you misplace them. And it doesn't just have to be your keys. You can put it on your laptop bag. You can put it on your luggage. You can put it on whatever you want. If the item does become lost and you can't seem to retrieve it, well, you know what? It'll generate a map for you so that you can find your lost belonging. They couldn't have made it any simpler. It is a great gift, and now is a great time to get one, because if you go over to Cobra.com and look in the special section for a limited time only, you buy one, you get one free. So get one for yourself and give one as a gift to that forgetful person that you know. They'll be glad that you did. It won't last long. Head over to Cobra.com today. All right, a piece that was posted up over by The American Conservative, which is a website I will never visit again, entitled Race, IQ, and Wealth, was up there. It talks about Charles Kenny, who's a former World Bank economist that specializes in international development, and his April publication in the journal Foreign Policy that was entitled Dumb and Dumber. Now, throughout this piece, the author, who I have to tell you, having read it through twice, I think almost goes on to contradict himself before he's all said and done, draws a lot of allusions to the 2001 publication, IQ and the Wealth of Nations. And in this publication, the authors explicitly argue that IQ scores for different populations are, for the most part, fixed and hereditary. And it's these, rather than, for example, economic structures or governmental ones, that tend to determine the long-term wealth of a given country. Now, intelligence, to be fair, is a little difficult to define, is it not? But it's generally accepted that IQ scores seem to constitute a rough measurement thereof. And so the authors collected a vast number of national IQ scores from the last 50 to 60 years and then compared them to income levels and economic growth rates. Since experts have discovered that nominal IQ scores over the last century or so have tended to rise at a seemingly constant rate, this is referred to as the Flynn effect, the authors have adjusted their raw scores accordingly, and having done so, they found a really strong correlation between the IQ of a nation's population and its real per capita gross product over the last few decades. And this would seem to indicate that smarter people tend to be wealthier and more successful, and that these things are really defined by things like genetics and, to an extent, geography. This is not earth-shattering information to me. I'm not surprised to find that someone who has a high IQ is more likely to have a child who has the same. I'm not surprised to learn that people in certain countries, as a general average, might have higher IQs than people in another country. I think you have to look at a number of outside factors that make that up, right? I don't know that you could examine something like IQ scores from a country in the third world and expect to find any other result. However, to be fair, let me say this. I read this piece over twice, and I'm not entirely certain that I fully grasp everything that the author has said. And so, I want to pass it along to you. If you want to find out more, and buckle yourselves in for quite a bit of heavy reading here, go over to theamericanconservative.com and check out this piece called Race, IQ, and Wealth. And there's a firestorm of comments underneath about you know, how credible some of the sources are in this piece, et cetera, et cetera. Even the author in his piece discredits some of the things that are referenced herein. Yeah. Bring a big cup of coffee with you before you sit down with that. On a less academic note, I've got some tips for you here that I found online about helping to keep your kids organized. And the reason I went looking for this is my son Elliot's room is to the point where soon, not yet, but soon, it will be overcome with toys. It will be overrun. I mean, he's grossly outnumbered as it is. but it will soon be overrun. And I found a couple tips online that I think are valid, and so I'm going to share them with you now. I think these are good ideas to help keep your kids organized. Here's one of them. Here's an idea for putting a limit on various keepsakes, whether they're things that your little one made at school or things that were given to him, free little knickknacks or whatever, that you have a Tupperware container or a plastic container of some kind, I guess, called a limiting container. They can keep all of these keepsake items that they want, provided that they fit into whatever this box is that you provide them with. And once the box is full, then either they can't store anything else in there, or they need to remove an item that they're no longer so fond of in favor of this newer, more fondly recalled item. And I think that's not a bad idea at all. This is one I think is extremely valid, that not only do you have a morning and an evening routine, but that you verbalize the steps of the routine to your children, even going so far, perhaps, as to post a morning and evening checklist on a bathroom mirror, the bedroom wall, and the refrigerator that covers everything from packing lunch to gathering school things, getting dressed, brushing the teeth, whatever makes up those particular time rituals. It's really important to not underemphasize the bedtime ritual either to pave a smoother path to beddy-bye time. I think that's an exceptionally good idea. This one, depending on the age of your little one, might be beneficial to you. The idea of empowering your kids to help with certain errands. For example, making a trip to a grocery store more like a scavenger hunt. Or, as your kids get a little more advanced, inviting them to explore online outlets to plan travel routes. You know, what would be the quickest way for us to get to Grandma's house? And giving them online tools, whether it might be like a MapQuest or a RouteForMe.com, something like that, so that you can move along your path in as efficient way as possible, and it gets your kids invested in being part of the overall process. I think that's a very good idea as well. And this one I liked, you'll hear in a moment why this is particularly relevant to the situation I just described to you. As it relates to maintaining a certain population of toys, they put forth this idea of A, B, C, D. An A toy is a favorite one that you play with all of the time, every single day. That's an A toy. There are B toys. These are the ones that you play with a lot, maybe as frequently as you go to the grocery store, but not every day. And maybe those get stored somewhere where the B toys belong. And the C toys are those that don't get played with very much at all, maybe only a couple times a year. And maybe those need to get boxed up and put in the closet. And the last of these are the D toys, which are ones that are not being played with at all. And the D in this instance stands for donation. Whether you take these to the Salvation Army or to the Goodwill store, or you give them to whatever, you might have a children's home in your community, which is like the politically correct term for an orphanage these days, or wherever you choose, right? There's all kinds of great nonprofits, like Toys for Tots at the Holidays. Not to say that they're only around at the holidays, I want to point out. But the idea that you encourage that generosity in your little one, and that toys that aren't being played with at all could be played with by a child who has no toys. And so those classified as D are ready for the donation pile. I think that's a fine idea to encourage in your little ones, and might also help you maintain a reasonable population of toys in your house so that your little one's room is not soon to be overrun with every type of Batman toy there is and assorted other plush thing. All right. Hope that helps. Whether you're at home, or you're at the office, or like me, you're on the go, you never have to worry about your electronic gizmo running out of juice, because you're never powerless when you've got a Duracell Power Mat. And I want to tell you, I was overlooking at the new website for these guys, DuracellPowerMat.us, which has an incredible array of stuff for you to look at over there and find out about the portable backup battery, the dual 1850 battery, which can charge two different devices simultaneously, is the one I like to take on the road with me. It especially saves me from ever having to worry about converters when I travel internationally. I can barely remember to take my charger along, let alone a converter for a different size outlet. You can charge your iPhone, your iPod device, your e-reader, your smartphone, your Bluetooth headset, and a world of other gizmos wirelessly when you've got a Duracell Power Mat. They have made wireless technology truly wireless, and they deliver it all up to you in a sleek and compact package. Go and check out their full line of accessories and wireless charging solutions. You'll be amazed at what these guys have come up with. Their awesome new website is DuracellPowerMat.us. In the blogosphere this week, there were several very interesting pieces. There are two of them that I want to talk to you about right now. One of them was over at dadcentric.com, a great daddy blog, and another was posted up by Colin Greer, probably best known for work over at Alternet. But Colin puts forth the idea, what he calls the demise of the American childhood. And he examines in his piece how, from the 1930s to the 1980s, there was a growing sense of a need to protect certain things for our children so that they could enjoy their formative years fully and get the most from their childhood experience in America. He cites in particular these things as it seemed as if it was on the rise. He talks about child labor laws, civil rights protection for all children, full and secure employment for parents, the rise of play as a mode of learning, about contraception and the pill. Feminism, he feels, even brought fatherhood back home to an extent and encouraged men to be more engaged in the parenting experience. There was greater regulation to protect children against adult violence, including corporal punishment and child abuse. There was the establishment of family and children's courts, including special sentencing for minors, and also access to quality education. However, citing some political reforms, including, named specifically, Ronald Reagan's Nation at Risk report, and then George Bush's No Child Left Behind Act, he feels as if the pressure cooker has really escalated. It's set in motion a competitiveness that pits kids against each other, and this produces insecurity and trauma, even in the lives of the most privileged children. He feels like schools that were once protected from the workplace have been turned into workplaces of rigid rules, intense competition, and permanent stress. Feels like play is now of diminished importance to the American child, and recreational activity in the school setting is like a privileged enrichment benefit. Unemployment and welfare reform have made family life insecure. It's had its greatest impact on the bottom 40% of income earners in our country. Child consumption has skyrocketed as an advertising target. He feels violence is all too often the trigger to this consumption. And despite our public recoil at things like child molestation, our media continues to sexualize children, especially girls. He notes that failure to protect children from adult assault has become a commonplace discovery in our basic institutions like the church and sports, and of course that has been the subject of much discussion in the news, especially in these last couple weeks. He, outside of the United States, draws attention to the fact that children in poor and immigrant communities, too, are actually working. They work on the land, they work in sweatshops, despite the fact that there are laws to the contrary. And children in this type of situation have less than a 10% chance of getting a college education. They've also talked about, in this piece, the extension of the age of culpability for criminal behavior and the use of adult courts for teenage offenders. And also brings up about the need for both parents to work, especially in the face of our recent economic downturn and the demand for higher productivity from American workers. He says this is the fall of American childhood. Now, Colin goes on to say that he doesn't include any statistical data here because it's all out there. You can go and find it. He simply assembled these points, and he seems to be making a compelling argument when you think about the way things have changed since the 1980s as it faces the shape and the context of an American childhood. I'm interested upon hearing these points that Colin makes, what you think about it. Well, I think his headline is deliberately sensationalist because it is trying to draw you into reading the piece, The Demise of the American Childhood. He raises an alarming number of really valid points about the way we regard the childhood years of our little ones. Check in with me over on Twitter, our Facebook fan page, Google Plus. I'd like to hear what you think about that. I also want to talk about this blog from dadcentric.com that Jason penned over there called The Mark of Zorro. And this, he talks about his reasoning for deciding to take his young son to see a PG-13 movie. It's called The Dark Knight Rises. You may have heard a little chitter-chatter about it. It's been in the news quite a bit for reasons both good and very, very bad. But I like the point that Jason draws here about an overlooked point in the Christopher Nolan trilogy about the things that inspired Bruce Wayne to eventually take up the mantle of Batman. That is, not only was he motivated by the guilt and the desire for revenge on the person who murdered his parents in cold blood, but he was inspired by a hero he saw on the big screen moments before that took place, when his parents took him to see The Mark of Zorro. And so perhaps taking his cue from that very sentiment, Jason took his son, who he even freely admits was probably not old enough to see a PG-13 movie, to see Batman. His son's hero is Batman, who he had never had the chance to see him on the big screen before. Certainly it's a judgment call for any parent. If you're going to take your little one to see The Dark Knight Rises, you've got to weigh all the factors of what the movie contains against what might be palatable or, in your opinion, acceptable for your little one to digest. But I like the sentiment here. I myself think back to the fact that one night, probably against their better judgment, my parents allowed me to stay up a full hour past my bedtime so that I could watch ABC's presentation of the original 1978 Superman film with Christopher Reeve. That film, I think, instilled in me a deep sense of wonder and my love of the superhero genre at large, my love of comic books, of that type of storytelling, of that type of fantasy, really come from the fact that I was so overwhelmed almost by the imagery and the storytelling of that Richard Donner film from 1978. And certainly, great movie making still takes place today. I had the chance to see The Dark Knight Rises. I talked about it at length on the recent Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe with my pal Clayton. And it is masterful movie making. It can inspire, and I think for the right audience, in spite of the wake of the horrible, horrible tragedy of Aurora, Colorado, there is something to be found in this that can be uplifting. Of course, that's not to say that anything other than the coincidence of that shooting taking place at a screening of The Dark Knight Rises and the unfortunate need of the deranged lunatic responsible for it to liken himself to Batman villain the Joker, there are no connections there. And I think perhaps most of all, in the wake of something as horrible as that, I've heard it called the largest mass murder in United States history. That may or may not be true. I don't know the statistics off the top of my head. That something that does inspire a little bit might be in order. And I'll say this about The Dark Knight Rises without trying to say too much, that the reason that Batman in this film, as well as the Commissioner Gordon character played by Gary Oldman, resonates so powerfully are because these are two regular human beings. They have no superpowers. They're not aliens from another planet. They are two ordinary Joes. Now, Batman, to be fair, really isn't all that ordinary, is he? He's quite wealthy, and he has a vast fortune and personal network at his disposal. But you know what? Jim Gordon does not. He's just an ordinary guy doing the very best that he can. And to see them not only try in the face of overwhelming odds, but to persevere and to succeed, that's something that anyone can find inspiring of any age. I don't think it matters if you're 12 or you're 13 or whatever you might be when you get dragged out to see this movie, which is rated PG-13. The story stands on its own. And in its own way, despite the fact that this is an incredibly dark film and in that way is almost like a counterpoint to the 1978 Superman film, which is bright primary colors in the middle of the day, both of these will instill you with a sense of wonder. And that is the experience that I want when I go to the movies, and I'm sure we all want for our little ones when they take in something on the big screen, not just the escapism of it, but the things it may spark in their imaginations as well. This is a really big time for fans and owners of Drobos who've been waiting for new levels of performance, flexibility, and portability. Now, last month, our friends over at Drobo announced the new Drobo 5D as well as the Drobo Mini with Thunderbolt, USB 3.0, and SSD acceleration, and these incredible storage devices are now available for pre-order, not just from the Drobo partners, but right in the Drobo store on Drobo.com. Now, the initial demand for these products has been far above the level of any other product rollout Drobo has ever done. So if you want to make certain that you get one of these, you need to place your pre-order and ensure your spot in line. They've even come up with a new custom carrying case for the portable Drobo Mini. And you don't have to just be a customer in the United States. International pricing and shipping options are available to you on the online Drobo store. So delay no further. Go find out about these two incredible new innovations from our friends over at Drobo. The 5D and the Mini await you at Drobo.com. Getting my son Elliot to brush his teeth can at times be a little bit of a crapshoot. Sometimes, if we happen to be in the bathroom and he sees his toothbrush, all he wants to do is brush his teeth. Even if it doesn't really make sense at that moment to be brushing his teeth. And yet at other times, when it's really rather imperative that we get him to brush his teeth, sometimes he's simply having none of it. He does not wish to play along, and he will find any way to avoid having his teeth brushed. He keeps his mouth closed, he runs away, anything he can think of to escape the dreaded brushing of the teeth. Well, sometimes it seems as if no matter what we do to attempt to get our little ones to brush their teeth, we are at a loss, right? We've got toothpaste of every different kind of flavor and color. There is a Lightning McQueen toothbrush, which in case that is not sufficient, we have a Spider-Man toothbrush, which lights up. And yet, there are those occasions when the brushing of the teeth is simply not happening. So we decided to outsource this particular topic. Did we here at Daddy on Board? We opened it up to you, the loyal Dob Bobbers, and you have answered. You checked in with us over on Twitter, where we're at the Daddy on Board. You posted it on our Facebook fan page, or maybe even over on the Google Plus. And we asked you this: can you tell us in one word, the only way I get my child to brush his or her teeth is by? And many of you checked in. In fact, Darren Bird said the way that they get it done in their house is by singing the ABC song, which is something I have not yet tried. I don't know that I know all the lyrics either. But I do love the Jackson 5. Thank you for checking in with that, Darren. Brent LaFrancis said, games. I'm assuming what you mean by this, Brent, is that you must make a game out of it. And that sounds like a sound idea to me. Lynette checked in, she said, eyeballing, and then gave further parenthetical explanation, saying, giving the mean or evil eye, of which I am a bit of a master. Thank you, Lynette, for checking in. Karen Beatrice Porcher, which I swear is the name of a poet, wrote this, threatening. I tell my 9-year-old if she doesn't brush her teeth, she will have to get a scaling and with no Novocaine. When she was little, she loved brushing them. Now it's another story. Frowny face. Thank you for that, Karen Beatrice. Marie checked in, and she said she just asks her please. She asks her little one please. That seems very polite of you. Sam also checked in. He said force, which I assume means that you're a Jedi. That you use your vaguely telekinetic powers to force the brush and the toothpaste into their mouth, which is remarkable, Sam. And I commend you for that. The force is strong with Sam. Danette checked in. And Danette, I could attempt to say the rest of your name, and I know I'm going to butcher it. So I'm just not going to. You know who you are. Danette wrote, asking. She loves to brush her teeth. Well, isn't that nice for you, Danette? Isn't that nice for you, unpronounceable surname? And last but not least, loyal Dob Bobber John Carl checked in. He said, participating. If I brush mine, my 2-year-old copies me. And that does work. I know that to be firsthand. In fact, sometimes keeping your adult toothbrush next to the kid's toothbrush and doing it together in the mirror is a good way to get things going. So thanks to John Carl, and thanks to everybody else that took the time to respond to our open-ended query about the brushing of little ones' teeth. We appreciate that, and we thank you for interacting with us. Of course, at the Daddy on Board on Twitter, check us on Facebook fan page, or over on Google Plus, you can leave us your hashtag little victories, or we've attempted, with mixed results, to assemble your biggest parenting gripes. And we really need a pile of them before we can go through them. I'm not going to add that section to the show and only have like 2. We need more. I could make a giant list and just start attributing it to common-sounding names. I could say, Danette sent this one in. But that would be false. That would be false. You need money. Well, don't we all? You know who has money? Gazelle. And you know what? They want to give it to you. Do you know what Gazelle buys? I'll tell you. They buy iPhones, iPads, iPods, or MacBooks. They also buy other types of smartphones from Motorola, LG, Samsung, and Blackberries. Things like that, they will take off your hands, and they will give you money. You're insured fast payment. fair prices and free shipping. That's right. My friends over at Gazelle are going to pay the shipping for you to send them your used consumer electronic good. They'll evaluate it, and then they're going to send you a payment. The whole thing takes about a week or less. It couldn't be easier, and it all starts like this. Go over to gazelle.com right now. Don't wait another day because your item is just going to keep losing value. Head over there to their website and find out what yours is worth today. You can even sign up to receive free email updates about the current value of your iPhone or iPad so you can decide when it's time to unload it and get money for your upgrade to the next coolest gadget or just to put money in your pocket. There's nothing wrong with that. They'll send you a paper check, put money in your PayPal. They give you 5% more when you choose an Amazon.com gift card. You'll love them. I certainly do. I get rid of all my used consumer electronics through Gazelle.com because I trust them and I like them and I think you'll feel the same. Go see them today. They're at Gazelle.com. All right, loyal Dawbobbers, it's that moment you've been waiting for. The moment when I may or may not attempt to pronounce your surname. It's time for your little victories. These were sent into our Facebook fan page. I've culled quite a few from over there, including this one from Phil Martin, who writes, "My 12-year-old asked me to take him to the midnight premiere of The Dark Knight Rises. Glad that he wants to spend that precious time with me. Taught my 9-year-old to catch and throw a baseball." Well done, Phil. You know, to be fair, Phil, I think because The Dark Knight Rises is rated PG-13, the 12-year-old couldn't have gotten in without you. I'm not sure exactly how strict the movie theaters are about that. Lisa Combs Burden wrote to me over on Facebook. She writes, "My parenting victory is as of last Tuesday, all my daughters are grown. We survived." Her daughters are 24, 22, and 18. "You're in the clear, Lisa. You made it out." Susie agrees with her. She says, "I'm with Lisa. All girls grown and youngest just accepted to nursing school. All have degrees and jobs." Good jobs, she writes. Good jobs. I've never had anyone chime in on little victories. "Oh, my daughters are strippers." I've never gotten that. And depending on your point of view, I mean, I would at least think in terms of the income, that could be a good job. John Zakur wrote to me, something that looks like Zakur. "When we were living in Costa Rica, my wife was a professor at the university, so I was house dad to a newborn every day. She would return from work, and I would proudly show her our baby, saying, 'See, he's still in one piece.'" Well done, John. I assume that once you moved out of Costa Rica, then your baby fell to pieces. Deanna Snell wrote to me. She writes, "I took every single toy out of my 4-year-old's room after her refusing to clean. She has to do chores to earn each toy back. So far today, she has washed the bathroom floor, helped with laundry, picked up trash, and cleaned off the kitchen table. My house is looking nice, and she's listening." Deanna, this is way more than a little victory. This is hashtag ingenious. I'm so stealing this idea from you. Well done, Deanna. Last but not least, Jody Fisher checked in with me. "My wife is 8 months pregnant," writes Jody. "For months, we've been explaining to our 3-year-old that mommy can't pick him up for a while. 3 weeks ago, he began requesting, 'Daddy, get me out of the car because mommy has a big belly.' Better late than never." Well done, Jody. Thanks for sharing your little victories with me. Over on Twitter right now, I'm starting something new. I want you to get in on hashtag what your kid says. Mine will be my 3-year-old. You'll find the tweet over there if you want to hear what my 3-year-old has had to share with the world. And I want you to fill in the blank and send yours along, too. If I get enough, or at least ones that interest me, I'll read them next week here on The Dob. In the meanwhile, I need you to go over to iTunes, leave a glowing review for me over there so that people find out about this program. Don't make me ask you again. Go over to iTunes and get it done. And then you can come see me live wherever I go. This weekend, I'm on the road with Chikara. I'll be in Portland, Maine. I'll also be in the greater Boston area on Sunday. Upcoming for us, we've got a charity event. Help us support Baseball Town Charities when we play First Energy Stadium in Reading, Pennsylvania. That's on Sunday, August 12th. And then the following weekend, we're in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Indianapolis, Indiana. The Chikara tour rolls on, and I'm everywhere they are. Go to chikarapro.com for more. Sunday, I'm on The Trending Show with Natalie. Tuesday, or maybe Wednesday, I'm on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe with Clayton Morris. This week, we welcome special guest jazz siren Jane Monheit joins us on the program. We're very excited to have her on the Grizz. And then I'll be back in about a week's time with a program likely to be titled Daddy on Board 98. Adios, amigos.